episode 81 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is April the 14th, 2013. I am Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my globe-trotting brother, James Furlough.
I am back!
Woo!
From the great state of Idaho.
Yeah, that's, Idaho, no. Okay.
It's PG Podcast.
Yeah, PG Podcast. See, okay, you know what I just realized?
That was comedy for the parents.
See, it's true. you know what I just realized? I have been saying the date of the year for the last 4 months, and every single podcast I say, today is April 7th, 2012. I've been calling it 2012 all year long so far, and nobody's noticed. Nobody's noticed.
Oh, they have. I just don't relay those comments to you because I think it's funny.
Oh, really?
No.
Okay. Never mind. That would be pretty funny. Anyways. I'd say it felt weird coming out of my mouth saying 2013. But we're not here to talk about the date. We're here to talk about this week. Like every week, we will be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera of corporations, dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and, of course, the technology that they are developing. Before we get in the heart of the show, James has a short disclosure that he'd like to throw at y'all.
Yeah, I work for HP. However, I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
That's good to know. If you'd like to follow us throughout the week, you can go and check out all of our different social media accounts where we broadcast continually. My Twitter is at Matthew D. Furlough.
And I am at James Furlough.
I made a big change to one of my social media accounts. I don't know if you noticed.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I've been debating it for the last 2 months.
Yes, I noticed. I know what it is.
And I had decided I was going to do it, but I didn't really know what the event was going to be, and I've decided that it's going to become, I'm not completely abandoning the original intention, but so what's your guess? What do you think it is?
Instagram, you're no longer doing fire photos only.
Yeah, the fire photos only. I got a pretty good archive of fire photos that I'm going to continue to post, but I've decided to mix in real life. This is real as it gets. And this weekend's felt appropriate, mostly because I finally did it when I wasn't entirely sober. So it gave me the courage to put my images out there and be judged. Anyways, if you want to go and find all of our stuff where you can follow us and whatnot, just go to furloughbros.com. That has all of the clicks and links. It has all the videos that we will show. That'll give you all of the music. Music. What am I talking about? I'm using. Oh, James. James.
Hey.
What is going on?
Oh boy, this could be interesting. I don't know why, but I suddenly got logged out, and it was like, you have been logged out because there are multiple people on your machine or something like that, and so it logged me out, and I was like, okay, this could be bad, and I re-logged in, and I said you have to re-authenticate via SMM or SMS, so I did that, and in the process of verifying it, kicked me off the broadcast.
That's awesome. So I had no idea that was going on. See, I'm good at this.
I was hoping that it would just magically fix itself.
Yeah. We've been on air the whole time, so, I mean.
Okay, that's good. And I'm just going to verify now that there's still just a single video going, because I don't record the podcast locally anymore.
Yeah, I'm going to say, come on, Google.
It's too bad. Yeah. It was like, oh, man. I don't want to. I don't know. I could merge together. I've got that skill. Anyways, what were you talking about?
Okay, so I was just saying, go to furloughbros.com. Cool. Go to furloughbros.com. That's got all the links and clicks, all the articles we talk about, everything fun that we do. So go there, check it out. Yeah, you missed my entire little diatribe on my move with the new social media and Instagram then, yeah? Or did you catch
most? I caught most of it.
Okay, we'll move on. It doesn't matter. Anyways, Except there's one like really cool picture that I thought it was me. I'm being all goofy in the kicking in the front seat, kicking in the back seat.
Yeah, dude. You're right. Had you not said anything, I don't think I would have realized it. But the second you said you changed something, I was like, oh, I got it.
Yeah, Kendra actually commented on it. She's like, oh, big time. I'm like, oh, geez, yeah, I know. Getting crazy. Cry. Dude, I bought Rebecca Black's Friday on Friday night, yeah. Because my great-grandlittle was like, hey, we should play Rebecca Black's Friday song. And I was like, dude, I don't have that song. It's a dumb song. He's like, well, you can just download it, can't you? And I was like, okay. Oh, man. Don't drink beer, people. It's bad for you. actually, that was the worst decision I made all weekend, so that's pretty good. but... Anyways.
My worst decision, I think, this weekend happened a few hours ago. I decided to hold true to my task list, and because I have recurring tasks that come up, mm-hmm. Either daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly, whatever. And one of them was to wash my car today, or to wash the cars today.
Yeah.
And so I did it in the middle of a rainstorm.
What? Why?
Because my car was dirty. And it was on my task list.
It was raining. I think it... Here, that is weird.
It was still dirty. The rain does not get dust off the car.
That's actually very true. That is very true. It's frustratingly true because it's almost good enough. But
I was, dude. So I was soaking wet and just like trying to give myself... what is that one called where you get cold and it's bad for you?
Hypothermia.
But my wife was out there with me and she was like laughing the whole time. She was like, this is crazy. We're washing cars in the storm.
Man.
It was on my task list. I don't know what to tell you.
It was 85 degrees all weekend.
That's great.
Even at night. Even at night, man.
I own a house.
Oh. Boom. Headshot.
My commute is 2 seconds.
That was rough. Okay, fair enough.
I can play this game all day long. No sales tax. Oh.
So I'm not going to give you the sales tax one. That's one, I don't know, that one doesn't bug me as much as it should, but. Oh, man.
Do you want to know the price of gas here, too? We can play this game. Dad is going to do a lot of practice on one upsmanship.
I do want to know the price of gas. What's the price of gas?
What is it? It's like three. Is that all I have to say? It's like $3.66?
That's material. I'm paying about $3.70, $3.75.
Okay. All right. That's not bad.
No, it's not. It's bad, but, you know, whatever. It could be worse.
Yeah. It's not about four.
Yeah. It was like $3.50 in Stockton, dude. Which made me wish I had my car. But. Actually, it was much cheaper not driving my car, so I'm glad I didn't.
Yeah, that's the way to go.
Anyways, let's talk tech, dude.
Oh, yeah, tech. Sure.
Sure, okay. So, you know what, though? Actually, I'll say this as a good segue. I really wish that we were living in Austin, Texas.
Ah, yes, because our weather's so amazing, huh?
Yeah. Also,
actually, they have really affordable index when you think about it that way. Their income to cost of living ratio is really good.
Oh yeah, which is really the only important. It's really the important way to measure it. I mean, you can have a great cost of living, but if you can't make a living, everything's really too expensive.
Yes.
And you can make a great living, but if the cost of living, you know, is like the Bay Area, it's like being broke all the time, even though you make more than all your friends. actually, see, that's the worst part, is I don't make more than all my friends, and I live in the more expensive area. But anyways, things are about to get sweeter in Austin because not only, and we didn't even mention this last week, but I figured everybody who listens to the show probably heard it, was the Google it. They are opening up Google Fiber in Austin, which is your 1 gigabit per second internet at affordable prices. And AT&T this week, basically on Wednesday, they were like, yeah, We're gonna do that too. Which is
sweet.
Which is like the whole point, because Google, I mean, I think Google would love to become one of the biggest ISPs in the world. They've got no problem with that being one of their streams of income. But really and truly, the most important part is that America gets ridiculous fast internet so that we use all of their super expensive services all the time. And, you know, the real goal is to get the other ISPs to catch up. Warner Bros. Is still contending that you don't actually need
Warner Bros.
That fast. No, not Warner Bros. Time Warner.
Time Warner. There we go. I was like,
what?
Why? Cool. I'm glad to have an opinion on the subject. Yeah.
Very interesting.
They're all just as much weight as ours.
Yeah, seriously. But Time Warner still contends that you don't actually need internet that fast. Or not that you don't need it, but that you don't want it, more importantly.
Oh, yeah. Who wants fast internet? That's dumb.
I know. I hate it. But
just go outside and climb a tree, right? Jeez.
Go outside and climb a tree, right. So, yeah, it's
sweet. So AT&T is defending their home turf, or not home turf, but you know, what they is their turf, saying we're gonna party up, we'll double down, and we'll meet you where you're at. That's exactly what Google had planned.
And I think more of the ISPs are gonna get it through their brains as time goes on that, you know, it was a good ride, but now that there's actual competition, people who aren't, you know, that's like the one real problem with a what's it called when a bunch of corporations get together behind the backs of everybody and
collude.
They were colluding. That's the one problem with colluding, is that all it takes is one player to not benefit from the collusion.
Boom.
And then it completely throws it off and they all have to step their game up.
We got another story later on that's going to talk about that. This is awesome.
That's great, man. It's like we're planning this
theme.
Stuff.
We do plan highly coordinated effort.
Actually, no, we do. We kind of do. I say that as a joke, but
maybe not highly.
I'm gonna say, I wouldn't say we plan so much as we intend. We intend things.
We just let the what is known as the brotherly force take effect.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That the fact that sometimes we like know exactly what we're.
Great minds think alike.
Exactly.
Hardly differ. Just saying. All right, dude. AT&T stepping it up. This is perfect. Yeah. I'm sure, like, somewhere, you know, there's a part of Google that's like, dang. And then another part where there's like, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Different sides of the CEO's brains.
That's sweet. That's cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. Very cool. Very exciting. So, yeah.
So there was another. Just as an FYI, fellow listeners.
Yeah.
This is going to be a. I'm not going to call rapid fire, but semi rapid fire night. So, don't expect us to dwell too long on each individual story because we have a lot and they're all worth mentioning. So that's what we're aiming for.
Right.
But that's also not our natural tendency, so there'll be those awkward pauses where we're like, and yeah.
Yeah.
I guess that's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a good week for a lot of tech. So let's go. Boom, 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 boom.
All right. So as you know, Facebook Home is now available for people to use.
Yeah.
And they've been getting rated in the App Store, which, by the way, in the Google Play Store. And those reviews are only done by people who have downloaded the actual app, okay? So, like, you and I could not review the app in the Google Play Store.
That is a good policy, really, because how could we review it?
You would think.
Yeah.
It is, because I don't think, like, in Apple's App Store, it doesn't require a download, does it? You could just be like, that.
I think you're right. That's a really good point. That's strange.
Yeah, so anyways, so far they have received 834 ratings, 398 of which are a one star.
Oh.
giving them an average rating of 2.3.
Oh.
So, and this was as of 2:10 p.m. Someday, whatever day I posted this article.
The 12th.
So I actually honestly don't know if it is evened out or not. But this was just a couple hours. So they were like, so this may not be the huge game changer that everyone is looking for. And the reviews that I've been reading is that the lock screen, you know, where it does the status updates that are doing the whole Ken Burns thing. They're like, it's cool at first, but it gets to be a little too much really quickly. And so they're like, you know, if you're really into Facebook, I guess, but you know, who wants Facebook all the time? You know, it's kind of like we were talking about, which could just be part of it's not our demographic. And everyone who's doing the early reviews are all tech people looking at it going, okay, yeah, I'm not that much on Facebook.
So they're at 3,800 reviews and it's 2.5 stars.
Oh, there you go. Hasn't moved the needle much. Of course, I think it's become self-feeding after a while.
Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, you know, that's a classic, you know, contagious catching on of ideas. The meme now, the idea is your expectation is that it's not very good. If it were at 5 stars, like more people would rate it at 5 stars. Unfortunately, you gotta.
And just for comparison's sake, the Facebook Messenger is at 4.4, and the full Facebook app is at 3.6. So, you know, it is lower.
The full Facebook app is at 3.6. That's actually important to know because it's like one of the best made apps out there. Like, who's complaining?
This is Android
about?
Again, not iOS.
I've used it. It's good. Okay. I mean, it's a great app.
So, and what I've been hearing though from everybody is they say, which you know, no surprise here, that Facebook Messenger is 4.4. Is everyone has been saying that the Messenger part of Facebook Home is like awesome, and apparently you can even turn off the Facebook Home launcher, go back to whatever your normal launcher is, and you can still use the chathead style Facebook Messenger.
Interesting.
On top of your other launcher, so that was they were like, that's what you do. You download Home, turn it off, and just use the chat heads, which they were like, the other one, they're like, it's a stupid name for an awesome service.
That's funny.
So you're going to see that roll out.
That's not shocking to me at all. It's obviously not shocking. If you listened to the show last week, that was like what I talked about was how awesome that was. And I think I wish you could do more with that. And I think that's the
next level of multitasking, this whole overlay idea. You know, that you're going to see. And that's just one perfect place where that gets used. And I think there's a whole bunch of others where, like, with your notifications, you know, why not have it when the banner's there? You tap on the banner and it does a little, you know, roll down on top to tell you whatever the information is, perhaps, whether it's a status update or a calendar thing, you know, whatever, you know, if it makes sense.
Yeah, because there's
with an option to then.
There is nothing. So there's nothing more annoying to me than when somebody writes a text that doesn't fit into the entire banner thing.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
let me read the whole text without going to the text message app. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, and so, you know, and so in either A, give you the option, or they should have you three options, right? A, like reply right there within that overlay. B, dismiss it. Or C, go to the actual app to do whatever you're going to do. That just seems such like an obvious, easy to do next step. And I think Facebook has now shown everybody one way to do that in a really cool, good-looking way. And I think in a very short amount of time, you're going to see everyone else do that. But all the other stuff, apparently not so cool.
That's interesting. I think it's funny. The more and more I think about it, the more and more I think I would totally use that. And I don't even like Facebook that well. I think I like
And you got to understand, too, it integrates with texting. So. Right. You know, you're not just subject to.
Well, it's like iMessages. I mean, it's cool. I mean, it's nice. It's good. I like it. That's unfortunate. I'm actually not as concerned about the their rating that it's 2.5 stars given the context of the actual app. Because it's what bar are you guys comparing this to? Like, what is a 5-star app in your opinion?
It's amazing.
You could probably look that up actually, but. You know what the one thing is, and it's funny. I wonder if that's a bigger trend because you know one of the things that I've often talked about is what I like is when you break out the, you know, the different functionalities of the apps. I like the fact that that Facebook has a photo app and a messaging app along with the main app. And I wish they would break out more and more of the functionality so that it wasn't just a single app, a monolith app, as it were. It was more diverse. And I wonder if that's the problem, is that, you know, what you're seeing here is your monolith app, which is an app that does everything, completely takes over your phone, gets poorly rated, whereas when you break out the different functionality with like Facebook Messenger, we're taking one data point, and I'm extrapolating because it fits my personal opinion.
it's the way to go.
You know, you know, honestly, I don't get paid for this.
I think more news article organizations should take a more what's the word I'm looking for? You know, they should be more biased and just be – they are biased. They should be upfront about it and actually have an opinion and embrace it.
Exactly.
Such as what we do here.
We're trying to make the world a better place. That's what we're doing here.
Yeah.
But that's interesting. That's cool.
Yeah, it is. yeah, so – they're changing the world. It's just they're going to do it indirectly.
Yeah.
They will be the ones leading the charge, which I think I'm okay with.
Yeah.
But that's because I don't trust Facebook. So on this next one, honestly, I have – there are two articles that are related, and I'm not 100% sure which one to do first. I think I'm going to start with the industry trend and then dive down to a specific new tech breakthrough.
Okay.
As opposed to, or should I start with the tech breakthrough and then talk about the trend?
Give me the tech breakthrough. That's what I want.
Okay. All right. we'll do that. That's cool. This is from GigaOM, which looks like they changed up their site. Looks all right. This is about solar. Okay.
And, oh, baby.
Yeah. Which is, there's a new one. The title is Tiny Wires Could Be a Breakthrough for Cheap Solar Panels. So there's a Swedish startup, because they're Swedes.
Stevens.
Yeah, they developed a new technology. I like this. They give this little summary, so I don't actually read it. I can just read this. That says it can boost the efficiency of standard solar panels at a minimum cost using, wait for it, nanowires.
Of course.
It is the great bright hope for solar manufacturers who have been crippled by the difficult solar market in 2013. That's what I'm saying, dude. Puns, that's where it's at. So anyways, I don't fully understand how solar works other than it's an amazing market. And if you and I could figure out how to start up a solar company, that would be cool. Even though it does sound like it's hard to make money in it.
It's ridiculously hard unless you get giant government subsidies, which, you know, I'm not opposed to.
Right. Well, you know, the problem is you can't continuously charge people because, well, the source is free for the most part.
Yeah.
Anyways, they're talking about how, which we'll talk about the trend in a little bit here. And so what this does is it does exactly what I just said. They're called Sol. The startup is called Solvoltex. I don't know.
Volatic.
I'm horrible. Volatic.
No, I feel like Solvoltex.
Voltaix. Voltaix.
Yeah. I almost feel like that's spelled wrong. Volatic is that?
Or is Swedish. Anyways.
Voltaix. They're Voltaix. Solvoltaix. That's the word I was. I knew the word was in there in my brain somewhere.
I like it. Okay, so what they do is they made these they make these tiny wires, nanowires, yes, that are normally expensive, but they're highly efficient semiconductor using gallium arsenide.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is scientists have figured out how like using that substance is like can make a super efficient solar cell.
Yeah.
Which is nice, but it's always been really expensive to use. And what they figured out how to do is by turning them into nano wires, you can then turn it into a like a liquid or half solid phase. Would they say it? Because normally it's like a gas normally,
yeah.
And it's just really hard to work with. But they figured out how to turn it into more like a solid, so you can literally paint these things like you would a house on top of the solar cells, and then just let them cool, and then they're ready to go. And as it dries, the tubes do their things. And so what they're going to do is their hope is to sell the technology or the ink, if you will, to solar panel makers, and then they'll put them on like inkjet style. And so what it'll do is it will give them, whoever starts it with it first, a huge competitive advantage in the fact that they'll be super efficient, and and people will be more inclined to want to buy them because the payback period will be better. So all I said, they figured out a way to make solar panels a lot more efficient for not a whole lot more cost.
And what I like,
great thing in the solar panel market.
And what I really like about this isn't a different way of manufacturing. A lot of times when you get these big solar breakthroughs, they require you to fundamentally redesign your production plants. Whereas all this is, it looks like, you have your furnaces that are cooking the wafers that you're making all your traditional wafer production for solar panels, because they're made on wafers, just like computer chips. It actually uses the same tools in many cases, just different chemicals. And different doping process. But one of the things that's like really important in these industries, and in order for these breakthroughs to have any like market traction, they need to fit with what the current standard for production is, or you add one step or you take away one step, because there's already billions of dollars of capital investment in this market. So you can't just recreate how you do solar panels and expect it to have any traction unless it offers, 100% efficiency. Unless it's just ridiculous, you're not really going to change the industry. Whereas this, it's one chemical that you're basically, it's one additional step where you do all the normal stuff and then you dope with this, or not dope, but you
layer.
You layer. Well, it's actually the only difference is during the doping process, you inject the chemicals coat everything, and then you heat it, whereas this sounds like you're not actually heating it. It just dries. But it's, I sit there and I go, man, that's what you want. That's actually something that could really affect the market and change things. In a big way, man, it makes me wish I was working for them. Whoa, baby, that's going to make you some money.
Yeah, no, it's cool. Well, they only have like 20 employees right now.
Oh, geez.
That's going to be some. And
that's going to be some $11 million. What, man? Unless they're just completely off base about how much it actually costs to do what the capital investment is, or what or more importantly, unless they're completely off on what the operating expense is, how expensive it is,
if
it's still expensive, then it could be, well, that's why they don't have any money. But if it's actually as cheap,
well, I think it's mostly because they're still in research stage, right? And they're going to spend this next year shopping the demoing how it works and perfecting the equipment. And so they want to raise like another looks like $49 million by 2016, and kind of stop there, which is relatively. That's not a ton from a startup standpoint, but
that kind of tech. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So it's all that to say, very cool. The thing that's going on in the solar space, and to now back it up a level, I would love to put solar panels on my house eventually.
Yeah,
that would be cool. But I kind of like, I want to wait like 10 years. I want it today, but I also want to wait 10 years because I know where this is headed. You know what I mean?
That's like me and my cybernetic enhancements, like. The real question is when to pull the trigger, because you don't want to do it too early when the technology is not forward compatible. you want to get it right at the right time.
But eventually it becomes a very compelling thing to do, which is what the Edison Electric Institute found in a recent survey that they did. Now, you got to understand that these guys are funded and paid for by the electric companies. And so it is in their best interest to paint a dire picture because the enemy is solar panels. And so what they are noticing is this trend, which is just this is classic trend. So number one, or I guess step zero, really, it's when people and communities start producing their own power via solar panels, four things happen, okay? Number one, the electricity utility companies sell less electricity.
Right.
Seems relatively obvious. They provide less than 1% of the power in the U.S. grid right now. But they think by 2020, it will be closer to like 10%. Okay?
Nice.
So as a result of selling less electricity, the rates for electricity will go up. Because
yes.
Oftentimes these utility companies, they have very long-term investments for their fossil fuel power plants, which have payoffs that could be like 30-plus years. And so if less people are using power and the cost of paying off that debt is the same, they have to spread it across fewer customers, prices go up. Does that make sense?
Yeah, man.
So again, Bloomberg thinks that in 2020 they'll be providing 10%, but they think that the rates for electricity could actually go up by more than 20%.
Whoa.
Yeah, exactly. So number three, what's worse, solar panels supplant the most profitable kind of power that utilities sell, which is the middle of the day during summer.
Right.
Right? You got air conditioners going, but now the solar panels are just sucking it in.
You're right.
Yeah. And so they're like, so it's not just that like 10% of the power, it's like the best time, the high peak, the expensive power is no longer. So it's like, you know, it's worse than, I said, you don't have to have a 10% installed base to have a 10% impact on their finances. And once they have like a 10% installed base because of, you know, when it works best, it's the most profitable part, you know, it's more than that. So anyways, So they're losing more. And then four, worse still, utilities will have to pay higher rates to finance new power plants and infrastructure because banks and other financial institutions are going to realize what's happening. And so they're not going to give them the low interest rates because they'll be a more risky investment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, plus they're going to be like, do we really, you know, they're going to try to make it work on older stuff because they're like, wow, we don't really want to make tons of investments to, you know, to build this stuff. So it's this self-defeating thing, right? Because,
right.
And they don't actually continue this trend, which I think they should, which is prices go up so there is going to be a natural progression of solar power efficiency, as we just discussed.
Right.
But the financial decision to do it is going to make more and more sense. Because if prices go up 20%, you're like, well, yeah, what the heck? Let's do some solar panels, you know. So it's just going to accelerate because more people do it, prices go up, it makes more sense to do it. You know, that's the hope and dream of it. And, you know, and so the process, according to this report, is already slowly but surely starting.
Right.
So the question for you and I is, you know, when does it make sense to pull the trigger? Which I think the only, like, there's two ways you can look at it, right? Is like, oh, I love tech and I love stuff and I just want to do it because I love Earth and, you know, right? There's the more what I would say the qualitative emotional side of the decision,
nice.
Which is not a, you know, not a bad thing to do, right? And that's a good reason to do it. The other one, it's a more like, it makes sense to do it when your payback period is something that you can stomach.
Right.
And you go, you know, this will pay back. I think doing anything longer than 5 years would be a mistake. But if you can do your payback in 5 years, depends on your usage levels.
Yeah. And I think 5 years is an interesting one because it's like, you know, in 5 years, the technology will be significantly better. You know, that's why you don't want to do it over a 10-year period because it's, you know, you'll have.
Yeah, you just be kicking yourself. And so for me, I think what I'm going to end up doing, my hope, is I'm not actually going to seriously consider it for like 5 years. And then I think that's when I'm going to start looking around and seeing what's going on because I think there'll be a ton of innovation and it'll be a much easier business decision to make in 5 years.
Yeah, it's one of those ones that I you know, it's an interesting, it's kind of a, it's taken a while for it to take off, and I know that there's a lot of within my industry, there's a lot of naysayers, but I definitely think it's sort of like the electric car, where it's, this one's inevitable. You know, they get a lot of bad press because they're such strong technologies. Yeah. They get a lot of bad press because they're such young technologies and the expectations are set so high, but the eventuality is that this is where it goes, man. This is how it works. You can't stop it because it makes more sense. Eventually, it always makes more sense. But eventually, you run out of fossil fuels. I mean, it's got to happen. You know, we don't have a choice.
Well, and as long as they're smart and the solar companies apply the principle of just continuous, slow, but steady innovation and just each year work on getting it a little bit better and better and better, it'll slowly happen. And, you know, and they will win. If they keep going for grand slams and keep trying to change stuff up, yeah, it may never happen. But
they're not. I mean, it's, you know.
Yeah, they are. No. They're slowly all getting better and coalescing. I still think that a company like HP can go in there and just kill it, but that's just me. It doesn't have to be HP. It could be Google. Too.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Could be cool.
That's all I got.
Yeah, it could be. Cool. All right. Well, so
who else could it be? Who else could do it? Who else could pull it off?
Big thing like that?
Yeah. Maybe Dell makes a little shift in focus.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, what about Intel?
That fruit company.
Intel.
They have any interest? Intel,
I
think.
I think Intel could. I think Intel, too. I think they have the infrastructure and the manufacturing capabilities to turn their core,
They'd have to figure out how to sell it into the channel. That could be a trick for them.
Yeah.
But maybe they'll just partner up with other manufacturers.
Exactly.
The home manufacturers. I could see that.
Yeah. Not foundries. That's what they have. but anyways, man. So we've been talking about this. The rooster is coming home to roost, or is that the rooster coming home to squat? What is that idiom? I don't even know.
Something's come home to roost.
There we go. So the PC sales are plunging. We've been talking about it. We've been saying it. This is a big trend. This is actually really interesting because I listening to people like hypothesize what's going on, which I really think, unless you were predicting it a long time ago, you just don't have any. The 2020 hindsight on this one is so easy because it's like it's a comedy of errors, or rather of trends, where, you know, PC sales are plunging because people aren't buying PCs anymore. As you're moved into this whole post-PC era that we've talked about, you know, again and again and again. And then it was really kicked off with a non-intuitive version of Windows. Windows that got a lot of bad press and people can't just sit down and use. Where's the start button? As the question begins. And since, you know, and I love tech people, they're like, Windows 8 is fantastic. It's like the best operating system out there. Like, I don't understand why people don't like it. You're like, or I think it will take off. You're like, people. The problem is that most of the money is made selling to people that don't know how to use computers. This is like, you can't just assume that it's going to do well. But what's interesting in all of this is, you know, and the other problem that businesses don't really have a huge incentive to flip over to Windows 8 because Windows 7 works really, really well. So you kind of have this, you have this, yeah, it's a great operating system. So you have this real trifecta, as it were, that's sort of coming together, which is, one, people aren't buying desktops and laptops. Two, Windows 7 still works really well. There's no incentive for businesses to switch over to Windows 8. And three, the consumer population that would be buying it, they're intimidated by it, by its being less than familiar. You put all those three things together.
But not our parents, man. They're going to go full bore Windows 8.
Oh, maybe. That's because they don't have a choice.
No, they did. They did find a Windows 7 machine, and were like, and even our dad was like, "You don't want that. It's Windows 7. It's old."
Yeah, yeah, that's what I like.
Okay, right, that's who we get it from. Sweet.
Yeah.
I don't care if it's worse. It's old.
Yeah, exactly. So this is, and this is just the, you know, and what we, and the other thing that everybody keeps saying is like, it's not actually that big of a deal because they're still selling a ton of computers, which if you listen to the show at a pretty length of time, we've always said that they're going to sell a ton of computers. They just will, but it's not kind of copies of Windows 8. It's the trend. It's a continuation of a trend, and it's the steepening of the trend that's really disconcerting because we already knew what the trend was. People aren't buying PCs anymore. Windows 8 was supposed to hopefully turn that around, but instead it accelerated it, which is really, really not what they wanted. And this is a big deal. It's a big trend in the industry, and it's going to affect companies. It's going to change, you know, it's going to materially affect Dell. It's going to materially, that's materially affecting them right now. but
well, if you look at the numbers, down at the bottom, they show worldwide and then U.S. shipments. Worldwide, HP is, who is number one, cool, barely, is down 23.7%, whereas Lenovo is flat, zero, which is actually pretty crazy.
Yeah.
And then there's Dell that's down 10%. And Acer is the only one that's down higher at 31%, which is a huge drop. And then in the U.S., HP, still number one by a fair margin, was down 22.9%. Dell was down 14%. Apple was down 7%. And then again, Lenovo was up 13%.
Yeah. What is Lenovo doing? That's actually really interesting. I have no idea what's going on there.
That's interesting. So that obviously has real impact on me.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, at least HP is more than a computer company, you know.
Ooh. True.
Acer's not. They're such a. Yeah, you know, and so I think, I don't know, that's gonna be more, and you know, it's the reason why Samsung's like lambasting Microsoft every chance they get. You guys are the problem. When the reality of it is, it's just this huge, it's a trend. It's just what's happening. And Windows 8 didn't help. But I think a lot of people are looking for somebody to blame. And Microsoft is a good one because, you know, they essentially created such a gigantic market. And, they're the ones that turned it in. They're the reasons why these other companies exist is because they support Microsoft, you know, that core tenant, and so when the whole thing starts to collapse, you got to find somebody to blame, and they're all pointing at Redmond, it'll be an interesting trend to continue to watch with Microsoft. It's not the end of the world for them this year, but over the next few, it might, and it'll be really curious to see. I'm really curious to see what they do with their next Windows 8 Blue, because the real question now is like, you know, do you stay the course? Do you keep the interfaces? Do you just say no, we're sticking with this, and we're going to make it work because the future is mobile, and we realize that, or do you try to make adjustments to make it more PC friendly so that your PC partner, your partners can actually not die, except for Lenovo. I actually really am curious about that now.
I don't know why, but yeah.
There's
some big drops. They're still selling a lot, but you know, companies create infrastructures and expenses around expected sales, and when you have a drop like that, you kind of go all hands on deck.
But yeah. The other big problem is that your real budget computers are lasting longer. You know, that's, and there's so many things, there's so many pieces of this. It's, you know, the Moore's Law has finally gotten us to this comfortable place to a large degree for PCs and stuff. It's fascinating. It's a huge topic, but we talk about it all the time. I just wanted to basically pat ourselves on the back for being right and giving you all the interesting different angles of why this is happening. This is the big thing. This is the big takeaway. Anybody who's telling you that it's one thing is wrong. It's a bunch of different things. And I think that anybody who's making a profit off of saying it's Microsoft's fault, looking at you, Samsung, they're doing it on purpose because they want you to move away from Microsoft and move over to an operating system that they make tons of money off of at this point, which is Android. Samsung is as loud as they are, not because they're angry about losing sales, but because they want to accelerate it. they couldn't be happier if people stop selling PCs and only buy tablets. And guess what? They're the biggest tablet seller in the world.
You know? Weird. Yeah.
Yeah. So you gotta be wary. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Totally. Hmm.
So have you been following this whole Bitcoin thing?
A little bit. And I have a video that explains how it works if you want me to share it. It's a little under four minutes, just to make sure we're all on the same page. Because I honestly learned a lot while watching the video.
All right, tell me. Show it to me.
All right. I could do this. Share the screen. Can I just do the whole thing? There we go. Oh, it's like an infinite loop. All right, if I do this.
The world is in financial disarray. Currencies failing, economies in wild flux, jobs being lost. But what if you could build an entirely new economy, one specifically designed for the digital realm? Well, that is the dream behind Bitcoin. Bitcoin is a decentralized electronic cash system that uses peer-to-peer networking along with digital signatures and cryptographics to generate currency. Now, with traditional money, think dollars, the euro, pesos, you've got a central bank, like the Federal Reserve. They issue the currency and they print more or less cash as needed, but not with Bitcoin. Bitcoins are generated using a process called mining. Your computer is given a complex mathematical problem to solve, and the goal is a 64-digit number. If your grey box can successfully solve that algorithm, then congratulations, you are the proud owner of a new block of 50 bitcoins.
Ooh.
The network automatically adjusts the difficulty of mining so that 50 bitcoins are created roughly every 10 minutes. The reason they call it mining is because there's a set number of bitcoins that can ever be mined in the system. There's only 21 million bitcoins that will ever be created in total. You can't just print off cash.
Seems like a random number.
In the real world, you're digging it out of the system like precious metals from some mathematical mine.
Yeah.
Right now, a bitcoin is roughly worth $70.
Whoa.
Last year, miners generated the equivalent of $16.7 million worth of bitcoins. We're only halfway down the mine shaft with over 10 million bitcoins unearthed.
I gotta get on this.
Like any economy, you don't want too much too fast.
Oh, man.
The value of your currency drops, or so slow that your economy grounds to a halt. It's designed to be a self-stabilizing economy. Whether it actually is that way, though, that is a little bit more complicated.
Ooh, which we'll talk about.
To the exchanges. These exchanges allow people to buy and sell with each other. The largest Bitcoin exchange is Mt. Gox. That's here that you can purchase bitcoins using local currencies. You can even store bitcoins too. Mind you, that can be a bit risky. Hackers have, on occasion, dangerously destabilized these exchanges.
Hmm.
Bitcoin is also the currency that fuels what's known as the dark web. Using software called Tor, you can hide your identity online and access the digital marketplace they call the Silk Road, where sellers flog illegal drugs like LSD, heroin, and marijuana.
Huh.
Buyers conduct all transactions using Bitcoin.
That's fun.
Fantastic.
The influence of Bitcoin is growing. WikiLeaks and WordPress will accept Bitcoin as cash.
Really?
Even the ideas behind Bitcoin are already changing the way people think about cash. The Royal Canadian Mint have just launched Mint Chip, an electronic currency backed by the Canadian government that borrows a lot from the philosophy of Bitcoin. And ultimately, that is what's most powerful about Bitcoin. Not the coins itself, but the way you can change the way we look at, think about, and most importantly, spend our money.
Cool.
Boom. Is that a good primer?
Yeah, that was a good primer. So, it sums up it pretty well. So basically what happened this last week, the value of Bitcoins had been meteoric in their value. They'd just been going up like crazy. People were making money hand over fist. It was a pretty sweet deal if you were in on it.
Well, yeah, because that video was talking about $70. This is at like $161.
No, they were on $250. It was huge, and then in a few hour period, it plunged down below $150. I mean, it just dropped like a rock. So a lot of people lost a tremendous amount of value in a very, very, very short period of time. And so the question is, what happened?
That's the system restabilizing. Yeah. Just a little slower than we'd like.
It's crazy, but yeah. Slower? You mean faster? Oh, I see what you're saying. It didn't stabilize in enough time, and then it stabilized very quickly.
Yeah.
So what happens is, it isn't actually really...
Hey,
zone curve.
Wait, hold up. Yeah. You totally were gone there. So what happens?
I'm back. Okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Jeez. Oh, this is fun.
What happens is...
So because it's kind of like gold, you have a finite supply, and as the price goes up, you don't want to spend it because, like, it's let's say it's Monday morning, and you've got $1,000 worth of Bitcoins, and they're all, you know, worth $100 each. Well, if by Monday afternoon they're all worth $105, dude, your value has just gone up. You've just made like $550 or whatever, you know, $500.
Yeah.
You've made money. It's like holding on to stock. And as that price goes up, you keep making more and more money. Well, you're not going to go around and spend it on a Twix later that day. Your money is worth more today than it was yesterday. And the value of Bitcoins is going up so high. And basically everybody was like, whoa, whoa, wait. I'll spend it when it stabilizes. People were investing, people were buying the coins, and basically just hoarding all of their coin. And everybody stopped spending it. Well, the problem with currency is if nobody's spending any money on it, it's not is using it, it's not actually worth anything. So the problem was that it was like, you couldn't sell it. You couldn't use it. They completely locked up the market and just normal market forces. And then, mid afternoon.
So how do you mine Bitcoins? I'm interested in this. I don't necessarily want to trade them, but I just want to mine them and sell them.
Because
if a coin is worth $150 and you can mine 50 of them, I can do quick math and realize that's worth my time.
It's some algorithm. It's kind of like, it's a peer-to-peer network. It's sort of like a BitTorrent. Is actually what they, you know, usually use as a reference. And then you just run this program and your computer will solve it. And if you can solve it faster than everybody else,
how do I solve it? I mean, like, do I have to do stuff with it?
You just run a program.
Love it.
And let your computer do it. Well, the problem is that your computer can't do it. Because what people do is they start to do, to be totally honest, I've never partaken in the mining process, but,
isn't it just once you solve it, you unlock it and we're all working on different problems?
No, that's the problem is everybody's like working together or working against each other on it. So it's like, you've got to be first. And so what a lot of people have done is they've gotten into the, building botnets or taking advantage of botnets to to mine. And they actually, there was an article later earlier this week that like there is an actual cost to Bitcoins to the economy because of how many computers are constantly working at chugging out these 64-bit characters and working on these algorithms. There are giant botnets that's the entire purpose because it is so financially, or it's so worth your time because the coins are worth so much and everything. And so, yeah, it's actually like a huge trade. I mean, and maybe I'm wrong. I honestly thought this was interesting from the perspective of the market crash. I don't have any idea whether or not I don't really know much about the mining other than it's a big game, man. People are into it. It is not easy to make a lot of money really quickly doing it because there are people that are way more invested in it than you are. not to say you can't do it or you shouldn't, but So it's crazy. It's crazy. All right, man.
I'm gonna look into this.
Yeah, I'd love to learn more about it. If you need help, let me know.
I don't understand the "you need help" part, but all right, I'm gonna do more research.
Cool. Definitely.
Now that I know the numbers, which means I should have done this research like 6 months ago.
Right.
Live and learn.
So, so this week, this is the year of the 3D printer. They're taking off. People are getting excited. So I have these two articles that I wanted to throw out there. This is where we're going to get into the real rapid fire stuff. One was this dude who built this 3D printer using sand and the sun. He basically goes out into a desert with this giant table. It's got a huge it's basically a magnifying glass, but it focuses the sun. A lens.
Sure sounds like a magnifying glass.
Yeah, it works just like a magnifying glass, but it focuses the sun down to a tiny little point. And then he's got
like a laser
solar panel thing on it that powers the motors, and he basically is able to what?
Like a laser.
Like a what? Yeah, pretty much.
Laser.
I know. You're gonna have to give me 1 second. I'm gonna switch.
Yeah, I'll give you all the time you need.
That's driving me nuts, man. I'm playing volleyball with my internet, trying to keep on one that actually works. It's pretty cool. And he's basically sintering sand, and then he just uses sand as the material, and it melts it all together. And it's this really simple project. It was a proof of concept type thing, but it's unique, and it's like, man, it works all totally on solar panel, and it uses raw materials. That's the sort of thing you go to the surface of the moon, you bring that up there, and you start lasering stuff out. Yeah, so it's a cool concept. You could see that sort of thing being done in the definitely maybe the distant future, but the future. The other big one is that. They're finding that hospitals are using 3D printers in the operating room, or at least a couple of rooms over, where they'll take because you can take your 3D MRI of an organ, they'll print the organ out. And the example that they gave was they're doing a liver transplant on this kid, and they wanted to figure out where they were going to have to slice the liver before they went into the operating room. And by taking the MRI and then printing out a model, they were actually able to figure that all out and have these really successful surgeries. So hospitals are getting in on the game, and man, it's moving already. It's exciting. I like it.
3D printers coming to you in 3D.
It's awesome.
That is cool. Yeah. I love it. What's not cool is what the FBI is up to.
Yeah.
There's this article in Wired. It's called "The Secrets of FBI Smartphone Surveillance Tool Revealed in a Court Fight." So apparently the government has a secret surveillance tool that they use to survey people. and there was an identity theft, and I think he was named Daniel David Rig Maiden. We'll call him that. And apparently they were trying to track him down and where he was and, like, pay attention to his stuff. And it's like the classics. They got the tower coming off the top of the van and, you know, and stuff like that. But they were worked with Verizon Wireless to help track down this suspect.
Yeah.
And Verizon actually went and, because they knew the person's, you know, his airport card or whatever it was called. Because they knew who the customer was, they had a signal sent in the background to his card to turn on his location settings
and ping
back its location so that they could figure out where he was.
Oh, geez, that's terrifying.
And then once they installed this new thing, anytime an incoming voice call arrived, the card would disconnect from any legitimate cell tower, which it was already connected to, and then send the real-time cell site location data to Verizon, which then forwarded it on to the FBI. And then they were able to position their Stingray in the neighborhood that he was in. And,
I realize that he was a Jurassic Park reference,
just so you know.
I appreciate it. Did you see it in 3D?
I did not.
Oh, dude. It's so good.
Was it awesome?
I'd never seen it in a theater, so it was great.
I remember we were just young enough where our parents were, like, probably smartly so.
Yeah.
You're not going to
see it. I was like, 9 at the time, and it was, like, a solid PG-13.
I remember our cousin of your same age saw it.
He didn't. He claims he didn't.
Oh.
He went with us, because both of us were like, this is
He just may not remember it, anyways, I remember someone our age saw it.
Yeah, I do remember that.
Oh, so jealous, because they were like, it's so loud and awesome.
It is loud and awesome. There are all sorts of lines that you don't even hear, too, like people talking in the background. The opening scene with the little kid like, it looks like a giant turkey to me. When he says that line, there's somebody in the background that goes, that kid's a little firecracker. I had never heard the line before. It was so funny. I was like, that's awesome.
So what you're saying is I got to watch all my movies with the audio cranked.
Yeah, yeah. And don't forget to have it remastered before you do that.
Kid's a firecracker.
Ridiculous. So anyways.
What I saw when I saw Top Gun in 3D, I was all of a sudden I could make out everything that was happening in the background.
Right.
And so I found myself actually not watching the movie, but watching the background. I was like, what? There's people in the back doing that? Cool.
That's funny. We're totally off. So this is terrifying because I realize this guy's a bad guy, and so, like, cool, we took down the bad guy.
He's a suspect.
But, yeah,
innocent
right.
until proven guilty.
You know, yeah, exactly. That's actually the point, is that he's not a bad guy until he's proven to be a bad guy. That's terrifying. I don't like that at all, man. This world is. It's unavoidable, though. That's the real problem. Is it's like you have nothing as an individual. As an individual, there's nothing you can do about it, man. Big Brother is watching.
So what the government has long asserted that it doesn't need to obtain a probable cause warrant to use their device because it doesn't collect the content of cell phone calls and text messages and operates like a pen register and trap and traces, whatever. Basically, it gets the equivalent of like header information. However, they did concede in this particular case they did need a warrant because it reached into his apartment remotely to locate the air card. And so even though they were like everything was signed off by a court and the magistrate. But it's a very interesting like, A, you can do that.
Yeah,
and
geez.
B, you just did it? You didn't ask permission or have to sign a warrant or anything. So yeah, it was just this very we're entering into the future where these types of things are now possible.
Yeah.
And the real question is going to be how far are we willing to go? Not can we do it anymore.
Right.
And this is just one of those like Oh. Hmm. Pre-crime is on the way. All right, cool.
Yeah, seriously.
But yeah, I saw that and was like, wow, fascinating. Way to go, Verizon.
Way to be
the scumbag we always knew you were.
Right? I mean, there are smart engineers that work there.
The truth is a tricky subject in their corporate office. Yeah. You know, what is best for the user? That's a great question.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah. Anyways.
Fun times. So, MIT is using DNA to make patterns on graphene so that we can make integrated circuits out of graphene.
It's like the miracle compound, isn't it? It's the new, silicon.
Silicon, nano, or not silicon. Well, it's the new nanotubes. So the problem right now is that graphene, so the nanotubes issue was awesome because it's like this miracle material. It's got all these amazing properties. All we had to do is figure out how to manufacture it at scale and
all we need to do is figure out how to make the elevator.
Right, exactly.
Using nanotubes. That's all we got to figure out. It's easy. I already got the idea. We're halfway there. The other half is just execute on it.
Exactly. Oh my god, that is one of the greatest onion sketches of all time. So basically what the problem is that with silicon nanotubes, carbon nanotubes, silicon nanotubes are different.
That's good. Well,
with carbon nanotubes, the problem that we were running into is that it's got all these awesome properties. If you could figure out how to actually, use it and make it cheaply, it'd be great, but we never did. Graphene is also this kind of miracle property. Once again, bunch of carbon. We love carbon. But if we could figure out how to use it, it's potentially could radically change all these different industries. And so right now there's a lot of people that are really looking for ways to get it to replace stuff. You know, we talked about the supercapacitors. Well, one area that would be really awesome is to use it as a semiconductor use it in the semiconductor, industry. And they're having one of the parts of the semiconductor process is creating patterns so that you can do all your different doping and whatnot. And they're having this really crazy hard time doing it. And MIT just I don't even, dude, this stuff blows my mind. Basically what they're doing is they're taking DNA and different chunks of DNA. They're building them all together. Or they're putting them into a little petri dish or a test tube, more likely. And they all kind of come together. This crazy video, guys, you should watch. It's actually kind of fun to watch. But they, as the different, they have DNA sequences that will, one DNA will latch, will strand, will match up with another, and they can build these blocks based on which DNA strands that they're putting in there, and then these blocks can be used as patterns, and they have these all these different nanostructures that they can build. They can do and they're showing off all the different stuff that they can make, and there are these 3D structures, and then they coat them in graphene, and it's just crazy. But what's really exciting about it is that this actually has some real potential as a cheap, affordable, and fast way of doing patterning on graphene, and might actually allow us to build integrated circuits. It's just nutty. It's just the craziest thing I've ever seen. But it might actually work. So that's kind of cool, and we'll keep an eye on that.
Keep going, graphene.
Oh, baby. So there's a global version of the Galaxy S4. There's two different versions of the Galaxy S4. There's the one that's coming to America, and then there's one that's coming to Korea, and then there's one that's going to the global market. The global market
America one's the best, right?
Nope, it's the worst. The one that's coming to America has LTE because they think that's what we want, but it's got it has the slower main chipset. The global one has this 8-core processor in it. It's just nuts. And it's it's crazy fast, but it doesn't have LTE. And then the one that's going to Korea, going to the hometown,
it's got both.
Yeah, it's got, they can make the LTE 8-core processor all integrated and it works, but they can't do big runs of it. So they're letting that one come home. They're giving us but because they think we're stupid and don't like fast processors and just want LTE, which they're right. That's what we want. they're giving us that one. And much of the tech community is frustrated that they don't get the super fast 8-core super phone. But
just buy a Korean phone. Done.
Exactly. Boom.
I don't know how you do that. I just made it sound pretty easy. But I'm pretty sure that's not easy to do.
Use your Bitcoin.
Oh, no, ship it to the U.S. I'm totally from Korea. Yeah.
I'm going to ship it. You ship it to the U.S. and then I'm going to ship it on to Korea. This is just a temporary thing.
Yeah, it's good. I'm on vacation.
Exactly. Just
ship it to where I'm at. Don't worry about my permanent mailing address. It's okay.
So, all right. So Yahoo stock is rebounding, finally. That's kind of exciting.
Really?
Yeah. I actually went to yahoo.com the other day.
And?
Their mobile site. I didn't get it. I still don't get Yahoo. I mean, what I get, I honestly, okay, can I'll be okay.
Please.
I hope it's obvious this point.
It's you and me.
I think it's. I hope it's obvious by this point that I use a bunch of different services. I use a bunch of different, you know, I try to use all the cool apps. I try to use all the cool websites. I try to know and understand why people use different stuff, even if it's not for me. I don't get Yahoo. Who uses Yahoo? I don't get it. Like, what is it? It's just a news site, right? I mean, that's it. And it's
fantasy,
like a news
sports.
Oh, yeah, I guess. And, like, weather and stuff. Is it just a bunch of different random services, and that's, like, their thing?
Well, I think that's the problem that they're dealing with, right, is it is a bunch of just random services that they're selling ads on, and that's how they generate all their revenue. And they are trying to coalesce around a unified strategy, right? Like, you know, Google, obviously, their whole thing is they want to put the world in order. Right. And, you know, and they're getting a little bit away from that, which is interesting. But that was, you know, it was search is obvious. We want to index the web. You talk about like Gmail as we're putting your messages in order and a whole bunch of their other services, you know, calendar, we're putting your schedule in order, whatever. You know, we can go on and on. It was all related to this idea of ordering data and information. And now Google Plus is about putting order to your friends and,
right,
and the cross section of how you interact with your friends with all of the data. Cool beans. You know, and so that's kind of the unifying
theme principle.
Principle is, you know, and Yahoo doesn't have that right now, and they need to try to find what that is. I know some people have talked about you know, Facebook owns your friend graph. And I don't know what Google owns. They just own your search life, which is a good one to own. Yeah. And so they were talking about could Yahoo potentially own your interest graph? And they have this potential gold mine in Flickr and combine that with a bunch of other stuff. So they just bought that messaging app and then that other one by that 19-year-old or 16-year-old or whatever it was.
The summary.
Yeah, Sumly.
That's right.
You know, and so is it possible that they could go after your interests somehow? You know, yeah, you do go to them for your news and your entertainment, and that's okay. And, you know, and could they, I don't know, I mean, like, they're competing against Reddit and Dig.
I was going to say, you know what the problem here is that I use Reddit, and I think that's the real issue. And, you know, that's been a big theme this
week.
But
not everyone is willing to do that or put up with that community, right? They want the Huffington Post style of just give me the big clickbait news items.
Yeah.
You know, what's going on with those big film stars? And, you know, for a lot of people, that's all that they need, that they care about.
Point. I,
you know, they're not everyone's a news junkie, and Reddit is really designed for people who like to consume a lot of information.
Yeah, the fire hydrant.
Yeah, yeah. Whether you know, and they're looking for some goofy, funny stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and so yeah. So, anyways, you know, so that's there. So I think, really, when you're seeing that stock rebound, it's it's really just a vote of confidence in Marissa Mayer saying, yeah, we think that she's got a good head on her shoulders and she's smart and she's trying to do things like that.
Not to mention that they actually made profits this quarter, which was kind of a big deal. I mean, Marissa Myers was I think it stopped the spiral on the stock, you know, the vote and confidence in her. Mm-hmm. But to have her actually make any money, like, whoa, okay, let's get back on board. This is awesome.
Sweet.
Yeah. But if nothing else, man, I have been talking about Yahoo's like suddenly in my face again. Like I don't get it yet. I don't use it for anything.
They don't have that killer service where you're just like, yeah, I want to use them for this because they're the best in the world at this.
Right. But,
I mean, it's, and a lot of the service that we use them because they're the best at it, and they don't have the best email client. I think they have a calendar client. I think they have contacts. The business news, a lot of people claim that they are, for, like I said, the big news items. Yeah. They obviously don't have the best search engine anymore. Do they have the best fantasy sports? Some would argue yes.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And they're all inclusive in that kind of stuff, which is nice. So I think they don't have the best photo sharing service anymore, but they used to, and they dropped the ball massively, and they're kicking themselves for that one.
Right.
So I don't know. They need to figure out what their core strength is going to be. What do they want to be the best in the world at? And then go and do it. And then defend that, vigorously. Along the way, selling ads and keep doing what they're doing with the other stuff and work on continuous improvement on those other services so that they're slowly getting better and better so that when you go there for whatever that killer app is and then you start checking out the other stuff, you go, this isn't half bad. You know, I don't think Google Finance is like amazingly better than Yahoo Finance, but true. I'm already in the Google ecosystem. I like the colors, their schemes, and I'm like,
it's so true. The colors play such an important part in which financial people I get my information from, which is the dumbest way to look at it. I mean, it couldn't be more stupid. But that, like, I like the yellows and reds and greens over the purples. It's crazy. Oh, jeez.
Yeah, so all that to say, I think that they're doing
it's cool. I'm glad to see them making money again. I mean, they are the old guard of Silicon Valley. The old guard. They've been around for 15 years, whatever. It's cool to watch that turnaround happen. That, you know, companies don't have to become dead companies. Yahoo! So, speaking of dead companies, the Z10 is not doing very well. Actually, some might be calling it for the BlackBerry company. Some would say that it's doing terrible, and this the reports that have been coming out, and BlackBerry has actually challenged this since this report has come out, and they want the SEC to look into it because they're like, hey, this doesn't even make sense. But the report so far is that the returns on the phones are exceeding the sales.
Yeah, that doesn't work.
Yeah, I know. But I guess the point that everybody's taking away from that is that's not possible. I think the argument that was being made was that people are returning, you know, you have like a month or whatever to return the phone. And so the sales picked up. And then so the sales for this month.
That month's returns were greater than that month's sales, but not lifetime. Yeah. Okay.
Right. And
I can see that.
Yeah, and
sales rate.
Yeah, which is not good.
Yeah, and you want to know the sad part is?
What?
We all, our instant reaction is not that that's impossible. You know, that doesn't even make sense. It's more like, huh, now how could that work? Because we all sit there and go, because it is possible.
Yeah. It's not that hard to believe.
You know, like if someone were like, you know, iPhone return rates is exceeding sales. Be like April Fools. Yeah, we get it. Ha ha ha. You know, I don't.
Yeah, so this is an Onion article, right?
Yeah. Or is this where, like, huh, that's weird. Is that possible? Because it's in the realm of possibility.
Yeah. I mean, exactly.
If you could show it to me mathematically, I would believe it.
Say, news that bad for BlackBerry is not unexpected. literally impossible market forces are.
So it turns out people don't actually want a keyboard, even though they thought they did. They get it and go, oh, yeah, this is dumb. Right, because it's Z10 with the keyboard, right?
I believe so. Yes.
Oh, man, poor BlackBerry.
I know. Seriously.
Whatever, dude.
Oh, jeez.
If you got your CEO saying the stuff that he's saying, you know, oh, just wait for the future when I'm going to have computers. It'll just be your phone and you connect it to a dumb terminal and it'll let you do everything. And we're going to lead the way. Like, okay, you're in trouble.
I'm going to say, it's the you leading the way that really is where you lose me.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. So, that's fun. We haven't had a This Week in BlackBerry update in a while, and I thought that one was appropriate.
Well, because let's be honest, what have they been doing?
Right. Just the continue. They're fighting the long defeat. And which is, you know, fun.
You fight the fights that are worth fighting.
Exactly. So I've got great news. I am not shallow.
Oh, that's good.
They did a big study and they decided that, you are almost certainly more shallow if you send more than 100 text messages a day.
How do I find this out?
What do you mean?
How do I find out how many texts I send?
I don't know. You're the one who gets the bill. You should get. You just look it up.
ATT.com, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. All right.
There was a time in my life where I was considered shallow, but I'm not anymore.
Maybe I gotta go here. Wireless.ATT.com.
Oh yes. Of course.
Apparently, that's what you got to do around here. Come on, hurry up. We got a show.
Let's see. You're freaking me out because I'm thinking, oh, man, you're going to mess up my internet. But that's
log in. That's what I wanted to do from the very beginning. Thank you. Their site is so slow that it hurts. And I don't understand why whenever you press the login button, they feel the need to have another little window pop up to tell you that you're logging in.
Yeah.
Just log me in. Don't tell me about it. Just do it. It's not that hard.
Bad website design is like the worst thing ever. Man, it is worse.
Okay, let's see here. View details. Okay. This is per day?
Yes. 100 per day on average.
So in the last billing cycle, okay.
Okay.
So that has been 24 days?
Yes.
Call it 25 days?
Yes.
Because we still have like 10 days left. 20 days? I could do math. I have sent 50 text messages.
That's it.
But
that's
awesome. Doesn't include iMessages, I don't think.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
So this makes it harder to tell. But my guess is that I'm not anywhere near, because that number would have to be like, what would that have to be? That would be 2,000, right?
Right.
Okay, so that one is 50. Let's see. What does it claim that yours is? You're 148.
Oh, baby.
Real text messages. Less than 2,000.
Certainly not including iMessages, because...
Yeah.
The people that I talk to most all have iPhones, and you...
So, get ready for this one.
Okay, yeah.
Our sister.
Oh, I love this, yeah. And she has an iPhone with iMessages. So.
2,567.
Oh, baby! I'm going to text her right now. You're shallow.
You're shallow, and I'm adding to your shallowness.
Scientifically proven.
Scientifically proven. Let's see if our mom is shallow. 91. Not bad.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Not bad. She's on par with me. And then my My good old wife, 155.
Oh,
she's
man.
Shallower than I am.
Yeah.
Because it's all a spectrum, right?
Exactly.
I'm the least shallow, or I use iMessage primarily.
I was gonna say, dude, I'm probably I don't think I do 100 a day. I definitely do 20 to
because I don't have a lot
now.
Of friends, and
yes,
I managed to talk all of my friends into getting iPhones. So,
I'm a, yeah.
Quality over quantity. That's my. Well, you don't have an iPhone. I guess you're not my friend.
Yeah, that's the real thing. Oh, you use the wrong phone. We can't talk. You know, I'm actually
this is not compatible here.
I've actually been thinking about that lately. That most of the people that I talk to on a really regular basis all use iMessages, all have iPhones, which is weird considering the fact that there's so many more Android phones out there. And I think it has to do with the area that we live in and the demographics of my friends, but. It's a curious trend. It interests me as to why that is, but I haven't put a lot of thought into it.
There you go. But I would say clearly our sister is really shallow.
Yeah, clearly.
And we're doing okay.
Yeah. So, yeah. I know. So this wasn't that interesting of an article, to be totally honest.
So Foursquare.
Yeah. Good job.
Don't worry about it.
Thank you.
Foursquare gets $140 million investment.
Oh, that's a lot.
It's a lot. See, and that's – wait, what did I say? Just 41 million, right?
Yeah.
Or did I say 141?
No, 41 mil.
Whatever, it's a lot. It's more than that solar company, for sure.
Right, and that solar company is actually building things.
Yeah.
These guys play around on computers.
The software just tells you, like, scale is important.
They probably are building a server farm, actually, that's why it's so expensive.
Yeah, really.
It probably is a capital investment there.
Mm-hmm. So, it's interesting that... In 2009, they debuted at South by Southwest, and everyone was like, this is amazing, you're the next Twitter, which I don't know if that's a compliment or not, but you know, I think they intended it to be a compliment.
Yeah, I think so.
But you know, whatever. But they went back again this year, and
yeah.
Dennis Crowley, the CEO of the Square that is made of four, had to remind the people that his company still even existed. Because it turns out that checking in and doing game mechanics to become the mayor of something has a short shelf life in exciting people, which is sad because I'm like the mayor of a bunch of places and I still check in. So what is
I was going to say, I actually, it's funny. I totally missed the cool window of opportunity. I have friends that I like because I joined and I became the mayor of my home. I became the mayor of this place and that place. Like, this is so cool. And then I realized I thought I was being cool because I was like checking out all my friends. I'm like, wow, man, these people have like a million badges. They're really into this. This is going to be awesome. And then you like talk to them for real and they're like, yeah, I don't use it anymore. But I'm just using it now. I'm just becoming cool. Why don't you use it anymore? I want to impress you. And that's exactly the problem. Nobody uses it. And you're the one who fooled me. You're the one who fooled me into thinking that it was still a big thing. Because you're always checking in. You're always telling me I'm mayor of this, I'm mayor of that. You're checking in at Disneyland. You see who's there. You're like, I was like, oh, man, clearly, Foursquare is still a huge thing. So I finally get my iPhone. And I'm like, get the Foursquare. Like, checking in, and I'm like, I don't want to become friends with everybody and like everybody know that I'm in on it until I have like some accomplishments, get some badges, so I can have my social cool up, and then all of a sudden I find out that nobody uses it. Like, what the heck? That's rough, man. That's rough. Turns out Facebook made a good decision by not buying them.
Yeah, so I still think that it's a cool service, and I know a lot of my friends, they sit there and go, they don't check into like their home or their office or regular places. They'll check into cool places.
Yeah, I you know what? I will say that it's, I actually didn't check in this weekend, but I thought about it like two or three times. I should check in and then just forgot.
Yeah. Or I like that, you know, with Instagram, they integrated it so that you can check in when taking a picture.
Right.
Now that you use Instagram the way it's intended, you might actually start doing that.
Yeah.
You know, which is cool. And so, which I would say I check in less at like regular places. I do. My definition of a fun special thing is different. I have a lot lower barrier, I think. But yeah, so I like, so like when I traveled, I checked into my hotel once just so I could be like, oh, right. I was here. But then I checked into each of the different restaurants that I tried. You know, so I did that. And then I think I checked into work each day and quickly became the mayor, which says something.
Right.
If I became mayor after checking in for 3 days,
right,
at a site that has a few thousand people.
Right.
Apparently Boise is not that cool. So anyways, that's how a lot of people will use it now, which is part of what their struggle is. And apparently, according to unidentified sources, but they should be in the know, they only brought in like $2 million of revenue last year, which is not a lot. And so, you know, so a lot of people were like, they actually thought that Foursquare was in trouble, and, they were going to run out of money by the end of this year.
Yeah.
And they're like, Foursquare's going to get bought out. They, you know, that's their only hope, which is exactly what the Yelp, one of the guys from Yelp said to them, which for obvious reasons, he doesn't like Foursquare.
Right.
Whatever. But it turns out that they just got $41 million from a bunch of people, so they're going to be around a little bit longer.
Yeah. That's cool.
Nice. Yeah, and they did just come out with a new app update that puts search first and foremost, which is really where their revenue is going to be, is on the discovery side of things.
Right.
But that is still dependent on people checking in. So I guess the hope would be you are looking for a cool place, so you search, you find it, and then you check in, and that... Right. Hopefully becomes a self-fulfilling thing. And then you have that small group of users such as myself who will continue to use it, who, you know, regardless of the game mechanics and things like that, will just feed it for when new people come along. So
interesting.
There's your Foursquare update.
Yeah.
And I'm still up, huh?
Yeah.
I saw this cool chart. I like charts, so when I saw it, I thought it was cool. It is a chart of Internet Explorer versus murder rates. And it very clearly shows that as Internet Explorer use has gone down, so have murders in the U.S.
It's like, you know, pirates prevent pirates off the Caribbean prevent global warming. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah. So what's really weird about this, actually, and this is a bigger question that, you know, has nothing to do with tech, but murder rates in the US are plunging. Who'd have thought? Like, with all the gun murdering that's going on, you'd think that wouldn't be the case, but it is. It's kind of cool. And you actually, you know what's really fascinating about it? Nobody really knows why. There's like...
Well, now we do.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, okay. You're not taking the bait. It's a bigger topic.
Yeah, I don't know why.
Well, that's like, I've actually like read into it, and I've read a bunch of different articles and stuff, and there's tons of different theories. It's sort of a Freakonomics thing where it's a bunch of different factors that go into why things that are probably, you know, trending, that, you know, incarceration rates and, but to a large degree, there's just not any like definitive. It was like back in the 90s this happened, like 96. Crime had kind of hit, and
has that was a Portlandia reference.
Yeah.
I'm on top of my references tonight.
What was it?
Portlandia.
Oh.
Which you shouldn't watch because you won't get it. I think
I've watched a few and I get it. I think it's funny. I think it's okay. Funny. I don't probably appreciate it as much as you do, but I get it. But like in the 90s, there was this like we were
1990s.
The crime rate kept going up, and all of a sudden, like in the 96, it just hit this precipitous drop. It just started to plummet, and it took people a decade to figure out like what was going on and why. And that was actually one of the big things that sold Freakonomics is they were like the first. It was like the first time that it was really coherently explained what happened. And it's happening again. People aren't getting murdered as much. Why? Nobody really knows. Yeah, it's like great news, everybody. I'm not sure why, and we hope it continues this way. But you know, we can't guarantee it because we don't actually understand it. But that's a hilarious causation correlation. Was that XKCD comic with the XKCD correlation comic? Have you seen this one?
Probably, but you'll have to remind me.
It's awesome. I used to think correlation implied causation. Then I took a statistics class. Now I don't. And then the person responds, sounds like the class helped. And the first person goes, well, maybe.
Nice.
Oh, man.
I love those discussions with
you.
That's funny.
Good times. So
that's
hey,
subtle. That's subtle.
Yeah, it's good, dude. Honestly, dude, Randall's good. He comes up with some funny stuff sometimes.
I own a shirt from him. I'm proud to say I support his art.
Sometimes it's like a million miles over my head. I don't get it at all, but generally speaking, I appreciate it a lot.
And then other times it just blows your mind.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Yeah. So I have a question. What's going to happen to you after you die?
You're going to go to heaven.
Okay. Perfect. What's specifically your Google account information?
Oh, well, if my wife is still alive, I'll give her access. She'll know where all of my passwords and everything is stored.
You say you won't give her access because you'll be dead. If you hadn't already given her your access, it'll be too late.
No, and I think I don't know what I'd ever do. Probably just shut it all down.
So what's cool is Google just launched what they call the Inactive Account Manager. Basically, what it allows you to do is it allows you to set up other users that will be given access to all of your Google accounts after a certain period of inactivity. I think six months is standard, but you can make it more or less. Or if you don't use anything on Google for 6 months, it's going to pop on over and give all your data up to people who can manage it for you. So it's a way to kind of that big question of what happens to your information after you pass. Google's figured out a solution. It's kind
can
of a weird
I,
one.
Can
but,
I bequeath rights before I'm inactive?
What do you mean?
Well, you know, I just would like say I die.
Yeah.
In a totally awesome way. And you know, and I want my wife to have like permission right away to go in and start messaging people as if I'm in the dead or whatever, right? I want her to be able to
it's a full prank on people. You know, it's important. The timing on that is important, I'll be honest.
But anyways, to let her be able to go in and manage it and do whatever she wants to do, either delete it, archive it, whatever. You know, I don't want to have to wait 6 months. I just let her do it right away. Once she's confirmed that I'm dead. I want to know,
That's the thing is that the timeout period, set a timeout period for your account. Google will alert you 1 month before the period expires. Your account will time out if you haven't signed into your Google accounts for your options are 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, and a year. And so this is like if you just like fall off the face of the planet and like, you know, and go to Africa. That's technically part of the planet, I realized, but it was an idiom.
And my wife never turns on my computer, because the second she turns on my computer, I'm connected.
Right. Then so this isn't about people dying. It's about people being inactive, which is nice because, you know, sometimes people disappear because they decide they don't want to be part of your system, man. So I don't know. It's interesting. It's an interesting solution, and
it's just an interesting problem in general that we've never really had to think about, and there's not a lot of infrastructure set up around it.
Right. It kind of freaks me out. I want to set it to a year because I'm be totally honest. Huh. I'm not entirely sure that I won't just disappear for 6 months. Like, I'm pretty sure I won't, but, you know.
Well, it sounds like you could still log in after 6 months, right?
Oh, yeah. But I don't want you to know my stuff. Come on now.
Well, it depends. Who you going to bequeath it to, man?
Yeah, that's actually the real question. I know you're like not pointing at yourself when you do that, but you're pointing at yourself.
You should give it to me. I'll take care of you, man. Don't worry about it.
Oh, man.
I'll start emailing people left and right. Hey!
Just don't look at my YouTube history, okay?
I'll be like this.
I just don't want people
to know. I'm stuck in Africa, and I need $1,000. Can you wire it to me in Oregon?
Send it to James's account. He'll manage it for me. Thank you.
I could probably verify a lot of stuff, too. You know, when they go, this sounds like your spam. Verify that I'm your friend. I'll be like, we went to school together. Done.
Yeah.
I can tell you a lot about James.
Yeah, I can tell you a lot of. He's the bestest out there. He's the greatest, man.
He was my favorite brother.
He's my favorite. oh man. So in another cool little twist of fate. Okay, so obviously Africa is one of my go-tos for falling off the face of the planet, but you know where else you can fall off the face of the planet? India. Ironically, that's actually an interesting one because that's what Columbus was trying to not do when he was trying to go to India and accidentally ran into America. Actually, you know what that whole thing – have you ever heard of the idea of the Flat World Society? It's like this new – they call it the Flat World Society, if you ever hear that term. But it's a reference to the idea that we as, like, in this time period, think back to, like, Columbus's day and think, whoa, that society believed in a flat world, when they absolutely – like, there's a huge amount of, like, documentation stuff going back as far as, like – you know, like BC, pre-biblical times, that like, people knew that the world wasn't flat. like the smart people, at least. Like, that wasn't a big shock. Like, Columbus, what the real problem was, what was so dangerous about what Columbus was doing was he thought that the world was a lot smaller around. He thought that it was a much shorter distance to get to India than what was classically believed. He was absolutely wrong. He just got lucky because there was a big old landmass in his way.
People thought he'd die because he would just run out of supplies.
Right, yeah, but nobody thought he was going to fall off the earth.
Well, how does that rumor get started, for crying out loud?
See, and that's actually a big question. That's why when they talk about the Flat Earth Society,
I hate schools.
How did we come to that? How did we jump to that conclusion? And it's funny because it's like, it's obvious when you talk about like what evidence did they have that the world wasn't flat. Well, you look at boats and they got these great telescopes and you watch the boat go over the horizon and then they don't fall off the planet. They just go over the horizon. Well, obviously, it's because it's curved. It has to be curved. That's the only possible explanation. And it's curved in every direction. Well, something that's curved in every direction is a ball. Like, you're like, oh, yeah. But that really doesn't take a lot to wrap your head around it. I mean, like, even very prehistory, pre-science, where you can't look at all the other planets in the solar system and realize they're all big balls, too. You know, even then, you still are forced to conclude that it's a ball. We're sitting on a big ball. Like, and nobody thought it was, well, not nobody, but like, your actual academics of back in the day knew it was round. It's crazy. Anyways, the more you know. But let's say you're trying to get to India. Guess what? more and more people are going to be using iPhones up in there. You know, we've been talking about this, and I keep mentioning this because I think that right now, you know, the meme of the day is that China is the next big important emerging market, but clearly Apple is thinks that India is at least as important, and they've been having all these crazy strategies.
In some ways, it's just easier to sell there.
Exactly.
They don't have the crazy restrictions that China does.
Right. You know,
they don't make you do public apologies.
Right, yeah. And so they're all of a sudden iPhones are just taking off, specifically the iPhone 4s, which gives all the more credence to the idea of which are the cheapest. And they say that the sweet spot for price is 20,000 rupees, and because the iPhone 4 is it's a flat price everywhere in the world. It costs the same no matter where you are. It's like 26,000, but they have this like buyback program where if you bring in your old cell phone, they'll give you some money. And even like cheap, like, you know, Nokia phones, those are worth like 6,000 rupees, which brings you down into the price point. So they're just selling like crazy. Well, Samsung all of a sudden was like, wait a second. We don't like this. So Samsung has dropped the price on their phones in India, and they're kicking off a price war in India, and they're selling bunch of cell phones, which all of this kind of leads to the idea that the iPhone 5 is selling terribly because it's super expensive. But all of this gives a lot of credence to this is a classic Apple strategy where you start to get the thing into the market, get everybody excited, and then 6 months later introduce a really affordable version that everybody can kind of get in on, which is what they did with the Airs.
Which is an even more like compounding or condemning factor for the PC sales.
Right. Right?
You have India that is, I mean, they have computers there, don't get me wrong, but they're going straight to mobile, and you're not going to see the type of PC saturation that you saw in the U.S. It's just never going to happen.
Or China. I mean, even China has really
yeah.
– everybody and tons of people in China have PCs, and it's just
eventually
not going to happen.
And, yeah.
Right. It's just not going to happen in India. India is going to be what the modern – you know, India is a fascinating place to look at where technology trends are going because they're skipping all the fundamentals, and they're just going straight to the mobile.
Which makes me keep thinking like – again, I keep struggling to buy an iPad, to justify the purchase of an iPad. I think I'd use it all the time, and I'd love it. I just trouble justifying it.
I do, and I do.
I know.
And thankfully, I didn't have to justify it.
Yeah. But there's another part of me, because I keep trying to justify it, right?
Yeah.
I keep trying. Is clearly this is the direction the world's headed in. If I want to remain relevant, I should probably get in on that.
Probably.
And buy one so I can be there and be learning it and doing it. Now, granted, I have a phone which is like a mini iPad, so I'm not like totally lost.
I use my iPhone more than I use my iPad. I will mention that.
Interesante.
Mostly because the internet never dies on my phone, even when Wi-Fi is bad, which I'm pretty sure China is like engaged in a major like assault on America right now because the internet is bad everywhere. Like, I hear it on the radio. It doesn't matter where I go. I feel like something's actually going on with the infrastructure of the internet. Now, I realize that that's just totally, like, maybe it's because I'm, like, impatient and I'm getting used to my LTE speeds. But it's driving me nuts, man. Everywhere. Okay. Sorry, I totally interrupted.
No, that's okay. Anyways, I was just thinking. I keep trying to justify it, and I'm not quite there yet, but
eventually.
Okay, you could do the last two quick.
Okay, so
actually, believe it or not, I've filled up the entire time.
Nice. So, there's been a major brute force attack. People are trying to get your basically a botnet is going around and trying different passwords, and they're just trying to get anywhere that uses a WordPress site like us. People are attacking it, and it's all over the world, and basically every major ISP has been affected by it. So awesome. Just be aware if you use it. And then the other one is Eric Schmidt wants the government to regulate commercial drones because they want Google to be the only ones that can spy on you in your backyard. But this is it's an interesting dilemma in the modern world where it's like I can build a spy drone for a couple hundred dollars that works really, really well and send it into my neighbor's yard. And commercially, you're going to be able to build these crazy drones that can just, like, you know, for like $500, you'll get these like super, like, you get like a drone that can stay up in the air for weeks because it runs on solar power. And, you know, who's to stop your average, like, mucky muck from spying on his neighbor? You know, so Schmidt wants them regulated because he thinks that's important. But it's an interesting question. I don't really know where to go with it, but and we don't really have time to figure it out either. Sorry. We could have figured it out for all of you. We could have answered this question, but we just don't have time. So we'll have to...
Maybe next time.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I won't be here.
That's right.
I'm going to be in Cabo San Lucas.
Very cool. I'll be here in sunny Oregon, podcasting it out with somebody.
It's a secret. You're still not telling me.
Well, I think I know.
You haven't asked them yet.
No, I have. I just need to finalize the confirmation. Once we actually have a time set up when we're doing it, that's when I'll know for sure. Up until then, it could be up in the air.
See.
So,
right.
Yeah, we'll see when we end up doing it. Cool. I don't know. See? It's no big deal. Very cool, man.
Cool.
Have fun on your trip.
I will.
Hope travels is good. And we'll see you the following week when you're back. Hopefully not much will happen while you're gone. No, I hope a lot happens. There's a ton of content to talk about. That'd be cool. Cool. All right, man. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. I am James Furlow, and my soon-to-be world traveler is a brother called Matthew Furlow. I recovered.
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
Kind of. So anyways, we will talk next time.
You ready?
Yeah, I'm
okay, good.
Just sent my email. I'm good.
Cool. All right. Brief moment of silence.
Told you I just sent it.
That's perfect. Okay. Try again. Brief momento de silencio.